Blog Talk Radio.
And what do you have? You have one in five children in America in and hunger to the point that many of them are selling their bodies. This is what 40 years of Reaganomics has brought us. It's turning us rapidly in the direction of a third world country. Mm-hmm. And it's and Republicans can't repudiate it. Donald Trump started out trying to repudiate it, and now he's promoting it. And it's just, it's this, enough of my rant.
So, anyway, we're going to go to, that was Tom Harden. That's it. But let's get hold of Larry here.
Hello.
Yes. Hey, Larry. How are you?
Hey, Leo. Good.
Hey, Bill.
Good evening, Larry. How's it going?
Hello, Larry.
Hi, guys. Good to hear your voice.
Hello, Larry.
We just lost you there.
Lost you for a second there.
Good. My back.
Yeah, we missed you, Larry. How you been?
Fine.
We've read some of those articles that you've sent over.
Yeah.
And about Malloy's new economic reality. That was quite an article. Would you
like
to comment?
Well, we're just living in this strange era of austerity. Both parties are preaching it in Connecticut, and austerity budgeting basically means cutting services and hurting the working class, and that's troubling on many levels. So it's difficult to watch.
And the problem is when you have less money circulating in the economy, it affects everybody. I mean, it really isn't the way to operate.
Lila, you're absolutely right, because you end up depriving people of services they need. And, the failure of the legislature and the governor to come up with a sensible and fair budget is it's reverberating in every corner of the state, from state parks that are closed early and prematurely to obviously more serious human impacts, laying off the deaf interpreters that we represent, the sign language interpreters, laying off, privatizing people who work with the developmentally disabled, and privatizing their homes, et cetera, et cetera. It's just, a long list of cuts. And I think Leo and I discussed last month there's money for Bridgewater, $130 billion with a B, hedge fund operation out of Westport and Greenwich that got a financial aid package from the governor and the bond commission. But, we're cutting services to cities and towns. We're cutting state services. Now we have a court decision on education funding that's going to have serious ramifications. And, we're looking the other way and avoiding doing, or we aren't, but our elected leaders are avoiding doing the right thing when it comes to taxing people and corporations fairly, and taking the sensible steps to ensure there's some revenue to fund these services. So it's tough to watch, and some of this plays out in the presidential debate too.
Oh, absolutely. And we were just listening to a short clip that we're in trouble no matter who gets elected.
I know. I kind of have that feeling. I agree.
Yeah, it just doesn't look good for us, the 99%. Looks great. Either 1% is going to be happy with either one, I think. It's just the rest of us.
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't matter. We have this archaic tax code. We have people, Wall Street executives, getting huge bonuses. The challenges do seem pretty steep.
And it seems like with education being affected, that's going to be a huge problem. Can you elaborate on that decision and how you think it's going to affect education?
I wish I could tell you how it's going to affect education, because it's going to be ultimately politicians. And, you know, that's sort of a scary thing. But essentially, Judge Thomas ruled that the state system for funding education is essentially unfair and discriminatory, and it was reflected in the most recent budget, where wealthier communities had an uptick in funding and education cost sharing money, and poor communities saw their funding cut. So it seems like it's kind of a back to the drawing board scenario.
Now, the way we fund education, I don't think is fair in this state anyway.
Well, and again, I agree with you. And the problem is it's tied into, you know, the fact that we're way too reliant on the property tax as an engine of revenue. And that's a function of the fact, again, you know, that we don't tax people fairly. You know, if we got back to the system of actually taxing wealth in the state instead of labor, because really we tax labor, we tax people like you and me. And, you know, we you know, the legislature has cut capital gains and dividends. It's, you know, cut corporate taxes. They've really rolled everything back. And what you have is this crazy system that's reliant on the property tax, and it keeps coming back to that. And there's a whole lot of solutions and it's kind of, that could help, but it's a really portentous decision. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out and what the politicians do in response. But like you said, and you're in public education, you know, you understand and you see it firsthand. And, you know, we've got communities cutting paraprofessionals and nurses and art and music and programs that kids benefit from. And, you know, to me, it's kind of all coming to a head now.
Well, where I work, we're pretty lucky. We haven't had to suffer the way so many other towns have had to suffer, but it's only a matter of time. That's how
right.
I
and just, you know, 3 months ago, we were in Torrington, Northwest Connecticut, at a Board of Ed hearing where they laid off, you know, Torrington Board of 40 paraprofessionals. And, you know, that's when I say, we're, you know, this is where the pedal hits the metal. You know, we have an inequitable funding system. Cities and towns are cutting, if they're not cutting services, and I'm glad to hear, you know, they're not in, you know, what's happening is that it's more distressed places like Torrington, you know, they're cutting staff, work with the kids, you know, special ed paras, et cetera, you know, 40 paras out of the para educators out of the school system. You know, what do you think is going to happen? It's not like the work can be absorbed by those who are left behind. You know, kids aren't getting services they need. And, you know, I think that's, you know, again, that's sort of going to be a side effect, or it's going to be an exacerbated effect of the, of this decision, of the court decision about education funding. And to me, it, you know, you can say I'm oversimplifying, but it comes back to our failure to ask the wealthiest people to pay their fair share, and our failure to reduce these gifts, these tax gifts that we give to corporations.
Yeah, well, I'm sure that's probably why Donald Trump hasn't released his taxes. I understand he hasn't paid any since the 70s.
How can that be?
He has nothing to say. Yeah.
How can that be? You know, and what a joke! I mean, he hasn't even succeeded in anything other than being famous.
Yeah, I don't know. He's built a lot of property, and
yeah, but you know, you got to be. You know, what value has he brought to the economy? I mean, it really is. You know. When the, you know, the father of the young man who was slain in Iraq said, you know, what have you sacrificed? And really, the guy has not sacrificed anything.
But, you know, I took homage to that one because, you know who that guy was?
as it turns out.
You know who that Kazar that guy was? He was the head lawyer in charge of bringing all the Syrian refugees and Muslim refugees into the United States. His law firm is connected to the State Department, and
so he
was he's getting like bajillion dollars bringing in all these people from Syria and everywhere else. So he was a setup, he was totally discredited
The bottom line is that things are never as they seem.
Yeah.
I'm not pleased with either candidate or
mm-hmm.
what they are for the rest of us. I don't see that I'm represented in their proposals at all. So, and I think a lot of people feel that way. I talk to people at work, and people just have a terrible look on their face. Maybe I'm afraid that a lot of people aren't going to vote, or they've just given up.
I agree. And that's a scary thought. At least when Obama, say what you will, Obama has had to deal with this stubborn
Congress.
Enthusiasm and excitement about his candidacies, and he articulated a vision. He did it in 2008, and then in 2012 he made it clear that he's been blockaded and obstructed. But it's sort of frightening to see, and disappointing at the same time. Like you said, I think a lot of people feel disengaged. And there's not a lot of enthusiasm with this election, and that's always sort of a scary thing when you have a guy like Trump running, you get the angry folks mobilizing. So who knows what's going to happen, and who knows who's going to turn out?
You just don't know, but most people just say, I don't really like either one of them.
Yeah.
And
mm-hmm.
they really don't like either one of them. It's just not a mild dislike. It's a strong dislike from what I can assess in talking to people. But anyway, I did want to talk to you about the article you sent on Narcan about the Montville Police Department and the
mm-hmm.
conflict they're kind of in, with about feeling not trained. I guess the point that I would like to make, and I was wondering what you think. We spend a lot of time dealing with the symptoms of the problems that we have. I'm not against Narcan.
Mm-hmm.
It's a wonderful thing. But treating the symptoms isn't going to fix this problem. And, of course, you know as well as I do that treatment was cut.
Correct.
By the legislature. So even though there was a big hoopla about providing Narcan to revive people, we don't have anything in place to help them get better in the long term. That money has been thrown out and programs closed down. And it's one thing to treat the symptoms, but we really do need to treat the root problem. And in the long run, it would be cheaper.
Well, and again, I think, and in I'm not going to say that's what I can't speak for the president of our Montville Police Union, Robin Salvatore, who expressed her concern in that article. But in fact, I'm going to probably see her tomorrow, and I want to talk to her a little bit more about it. But in a way, she's articulating a variation of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
Police and other authority figures and so on, are being asked, paraprofessionals at schools who have to administer EpiPen, working people are being asked to kind of do this patchwork stuff because, again, the politicians have abdicated their responsibility. And that's what our police are saying. They understand why the bill was passed requiring them to administer this drug, but they're not trained. It's another burden on them at a time when they're being asked to wear body cameras and they're being monitored and they're under some intense public scrutiny. And, I think Robin's point is that, we're not getting to the underlying problem of treatment.
Right.
And and the Malloy Democratic budget cut. You know, it's indisputable.
Absolutely. Besides the fact that people probably would like to have some jobs, you know, the poverty
right.
and the fact that our economy has gone south and continues to go south, it is part of the problem. And, you know, a lot of these people are young people who see no future.
Exactly.
And, it's, you know, it's reflective of what's happening in our state and in the leadership in our state, I feel.
I totally agree with you, you know, and you said it well. You said it better than I could have said it, which is that, you know, we're not treating the underlying symptoms, you know.
Right.
Or we're
and
treating
I,
the symptoms, but we're not getting to the cause.
That's right, and I feel like that article that you're the leader of that union that you're going to speak to is absolutely right. I feel like people are being asked to do things that they sometimes feel uncomfortable doing. Not that they want anything bad to happen to someone, you know, but that's a real something maybe they didn't sign up for when they decided to choose that job. I mean, that's a heavy burden, I think.
Well, that's their concern. It's, you know, and again, I know, you know, we represent paraeducators who, you know, have to administer the EpiPen, which, by the way, is now, you know, cost school systems, you know, $600 a pop. You know, we're asking people to, who are, you know, in the case of paraeducators, are supposed to be providing teaching and assisting teachers and guiding kids. And we're asking police who are supposed to be patrolling the streets and keeping the community safe. We're asking correction officers that we represent to be mental health counselors, something they're, you know, they will freely admit that they weren't prepared or trained to do because, you know, you're mixing inmate populations and you're trying to reduce the inmate population. You know, all of this to me is a function of, you know, the austerity budget that we're going to cut, and instead of build, and invest. And this is what you get. And,
you
know, there's all kinds of liability issues, you know?
That's huge. Yeah, you know, we're asking people to put their jobs on the line and their lives on the line. And
mm-hmm.
I don't think that's fair. Are there any bills in the legislature to change the way things are being funded by Malloy?
Well, obviously, as you know, they're not in session, and we're going to have to wait and see till November when the election happens and see who's in control of the chambers. But you know, we're just in the process now of interviewing candidates and, you know, being pretty selective about whether or not we're going to endorse candidates based on their willingness to embrace taking on the governor, taking on their own parties, and putting forward a budget that's about funding services for people. And it's going to be a pretty contentious session, whatever happens. And, you know, it's going to be hard against but I think the fact that there is a deficit is all the more reason why you have to really look at how you're bringing in revenue. And, you know, we have another problem coming up, and it's something that everybody in Connecticut's watching, which is what's going on in Hartford. And will they declare bankruptcy and get out of their collective bargaining agreements and get out of their obligations? And, you know, that's going to be something we're monitoring because we represent several hundred workers in Hartford who have played by the rules and who did not create the crisis that exists there.
How close are they to declaring bankruptcy there?
I don't know. It just keeps getting brought up, and it's raised as a possibility. The mayor saying he doesn't want to go that route, but you know, he went to the legislature looking for financial legislation allowing them to you know, declare a financial emergency. So you know, it wouldn't surprise me if something happened soon. We hope it doesn't. We're at the table right now for our city workers trying to reach an agreement, and it's just a very difficult process. And again, Hartford's a classic example where, you know, it's sort of a symbol of what happens when you are overly reliant on property tax and when you don't have any kind of regional connections or county government. It's really been abandoned by a lot of different communities, the corporate community, the suburban communities, and now the pedal's hitting the metal. So it's going to be a difficult time in the months ahead in that city.
Did you by any chance hear that Hillary and may be replaced by Biden?
I can't see that happening. Can you?
Yeah, I do, because I can honestly see it, because if she comes out with this particular article saying that they already have that planned, the White House has it planned to replace her if they need to, because of the because of her pneumonia and because of the other things, and there's a lot of speculation now that she may have advanced Parkinson's, which makes it look like she's taking all the spills and why she's forgetting stuff and why she can't, you know. But it would be interesting to see what happens. For some reason, I don't think she's going to make it to that.
Doesn't look well.
Boy, does she.
I don't know. Do you have the inside scoop? Any of that?
I certainly don't. I think there's a lot of, a lot of it, though, is such negative Hillary stuff, and then it doesn't seem to, I think Trump gets treated with a little bit of a different standard when it comes to that. So I think people should be careful about the speculation, but we'll see. I haven't heard that. But, look, I guess if it was to happen, Biden would be the best choice. But, he's 72 himself. He's not a spring chicken either.
No, we don't have very young people running for that office or interested in it, do we? I mean, it does take energy to be president. It really does. I mean, I look at Obama. He aged considerably in his two
years. Yeah, he did. And, I get people, have concern about Hillary. It's just, The disaster that would be Trump is just so frightening to contemplate that I find it hard to believe that people actually would want to see him get elected, even if they can't.
Wait a minute, you're not proud to be a deplorable? No, Larry was a deplorable for 10 years on radio. I mean, still am.
I really am frightened by the guy. I really am, though.
About him, I don't like.
No, remember when the conservative media was everywhere, and all of a sudden, and we was the deplorables, and then all of a sudden it changed to the left, and now, anybody with an independent view is a deplorable, I don't know, man.
You know what? Both campaigns leave plenty of room for disappointment. That's for sure.
That is an understatement.
Yeah. Well, there was a good editorial in the Times today that said really, neither candidate has articulated a vision for helping people in poverty and jump-starting the economy. We're not talking about the issues that are that matter to people, and I know there's problems in a lot of European countries, but getting access to healthcare and access to higher education and access to paid family leave and medical leave are not among those problems. So
we have a lot of people in our population are suffering from lack of food, and they have hunger.
And
no shelter.
That's exactly right.
And they don't have those problems in socialized countries in Europe. Everyone has a place to live, and if they choose to, and at least they have food and shelter and clean water. And we have places in this country where people don't have any of those things. And I find that very scary.
I do too, and we're in this mentality, where we want to privatize and outsource, public commodities that belong to the public, like water, like sewer systems, like school cafeteria services. I feel like I'm just living in this country where everything's available to the highest bidder, and consequences be damned. And, both parties are guilty of that.
And as both you and Leo said, neither of these candidates are articulating a vision for a better America and better opportunity for the middle class or the poor.
No.
You know, I don't hear it from.
And we have a, you know, and there's this article that was in The Nation. I put it up. Our Council for Facebook page is called "Your Money is Tax is Subsidizing Wall Street Bonuses." Congress says it can't fund a Zika response, but it's found millions of dollars to reward CEO compensation. And, you know, it's changes in the tax code that actually happened under Bill Clinton's presidency. And it enabled Wells Fargo chairman John Stumpf to get $155 million in performance-based pay above his actual salary. So it's just crazy. And Wells Fargo, in addition, claimed, and I'm reading this article in The Nation, I hope you guys check it out, a $54.2 million tax subsidy based solely on their CEO's pay. So, you know,
oh,
the CEO gets to pocket more money and the company gets a tax subsidy based on how they restructure the pay. And, you know, so basically all these Wall Street guys who help tank the economy or their companies help tank the economy are getting huge payouts. And that's sort of an untold story, you know.
Oh, no, it's frightening. It's frightening, Larry. In fact, I think I posted that up a couple of days ago whenever I came
out. Oh, yeah, I'm sure you were. Wow. Yeah, I just don't, and that's why, you know, I get so, you know, people are debating about, smaller issues. And meanwhile, these guys are laughing all the way to the bank.
Yeah.
You know, there was an article here that Sal wrote, an op-ed that you sent over too, about the, it says that there's a number worth keeping in mind as we read in the final weeks of the superheated election cycle is $133 billion. And he says that's the amount in annual wages that non-union workers lose due to the decline in unions. And he says you can find it in a new report in Economic Policy Institute, empirically demonstrating the attack on unions is the biggest reason why wages are stuck and inequality is growing. Yeah, that I'm sure that's true. I mean, that's
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, we look around, we just see the deterioration of the unions. And guys like Malloy destroying, you know, jobs right and left, and every state is just starving.
Well, I think that what makes me so upset about Malloy is that we all supported him, and then he turned around and really just tried to destroy unions and made all his cuts with unions. I mean, that's how much he appreciated being supported by union people.
Yeah, that's, you know.
Yeah, Democrats are giving him, you know, recognizing him for his wonderful jobs, you know, that he's doing by giving him the, you know, chairman of the convention and got off.
That made me so angry.
You know, to see him promoted to anything above what he his own station is frightening. You know,
yeah,
Democrats.
That's well said. But yeah, just getting back to what Lila said about Malloy, it really, you know, it is disappointing. And but again, I think that, you know, we have to sort of retrench and say, what are we willing to fight for? And I'm just hoping the only good thing that can come out of all this is that, you know, people really start awakening to, you know, the corrosive power of money and politics. And, you know, instead of blaming each other and, you know, blaming working people and unions, you know, let's start pointing at the folks at the top who have rigged the system and the politicians who are doing their bidding. That's where we got to focus.
I'm really hoping that we get some younger people elected who maybe have a different vision than people my age who seem to have created a lot of the problem that we have.
But darn it, you get guys like McCain and all these other old
they won't
get out of there, and they get so, they're so entrenched with their with everything that they, you know, they'll stay there till they're in their 90s. You know what I mean? I mean, it's absolutely sick. And a guy like McCain is a frightening piece of work. You know?
Isn't he though?
And all that old crony bunch of Republicans and Democrats are absolutely frightening.
Yeah.
How does that guy keep?
He's an angry old man, and I respect what he's been through. I understand that he served the country. He was a prisoner of war. There's no, you know, more painful thing. But, you know, gosh, at what point do you get out of there?
Yeah,
you
know? I don't know why, holding on to this archaic view.
Yeah, and the idiots in Arizona who vote for him, I guess. That's, you know, the simplest. But, you know, I read some statistic. You guys probably have something more updated that, you know, like, I think the average senator is a millionaire. I think that pretty much like 48 out of 50 are millionaires and above. You know, these guys are doing really well.
Oh, over 80%. You know, Mitch McConnell, the son of a bitch, started. He came into Congress with I think he had a net worth of about $60,000 or something. To this today, his net worth is over $26 million. All right, and you know, and he's done nothing but be a senator, right? For all 26 years of Kentucky. Mm-hmm.
I've worked over 30 years at this job. I have nothing close to that.
Yeah, but you know what? Illegal is not illegal for senators and the government.
Inside trading.
But inside trading is been approved there, and in fact, they even passed a law to protect themselves. All right,
Can you imagine that?
That they're able to do insider trading as people, as heads of committees and all these things, in investigations and whatnot. These guys are able to, to do that, and get away with it.
You're right, though, because, their salary, they don't make $1 million. So how is it that these guys end up being so damn rich?
Right. That's right. And what happens, they leave. They go to a job that pays them $500,000 to lobby.
Right.
Today I heard that I had wondered what happened to Dodd, and I knew that he had gotten a job but I didn't know that he got the job. I knew he got a job in the film industry.
Yeah.
But I did not know that he is the president of the United Film.
Yeah.
Makers of the world, he's the president of that. How the hell did a guy get the job to do that? How do you qualify to be
I'll tell you how. I mean, he's just an insider with connections, and that's what these big corporations want. They want somebody. Look, Chris Dye, he's slicker than snot in a doorknob, And,
I never heard that expression before, captures him.
Well, look at that Dodd-Frank thing. I mean, my God, that was a catastrophe to begin with.
He slid out of there right about that time. I was being,
But that's what happens, These guys they open doors, and they become lobbyists, and they're probably doing it while they're senators, and a lot of them are doing it while they're congressmen and senators too.
Remember Frist?
Yeah. Yep.
He was a huge. His family was involved with a huge healthcare HMOs.
Yeah,
and what happened is once he left there, he became a huge lobbyist for all HMOs, healthcare, private healthcare.
Oh boy!
But everybody's got their gig,
Got their hand
in the millionaire.
Yeah. And you wonder why everybody else is falling behind.
Yeah,
Jeez.
And it's like, I don't know if you heard about this, but Bill Clinton was getting $14.5 million. All right, got $14.5 million for starting up that as his salary for the
university.
The university, yeah. I forget the name of the university now, but he was the headmaster. These guys are. It just there's no limit.
The things they think of to get tax-free money is just amazing.
Just to get money.
Well, I think it's really kind of humorous that There was a lot of finger pointing at Trump and his university, and it turned out that Bill Clinton had his. So they all figure out. He's been a great moneymaker, is all I can say, Larry.
Yeah. I think they sometimes these folks have more in common than they have that separates them, you know, and being able to chase down the money.
Exactly what I was thinking. I thought, that's a real scam for all these people. That's all it is.
Oh, there was something I wanted to ask you, because I didn't know that you were involved, or that AFSCME was involved with the coal miners' unions. Did you see that?
We are in support of their issues. Yeah, I guess there was a big rally last week.
Yeah.
I was kind of proud of that, though. I think that, you know, that's a little bit of old-fashioned labor solidarity.
Yeah, I thought that was good, too. I thought more unions should join, you know.
Well, that's what made us stronger in the older days, you know, and it's one of the things we've got to get back if we're going to regain our footing. We have to stand up for each other.
You guys would, because that
and I don't like the fact that some unions aren't allowed to strike. I don't think that's right.
Yeah, especially public unions.
Yeah, I think you should.
Right. Well, that's a creature of legislation. Like it's illegal. Like, for example, in Connecticut, it's illegal for public employee unions to strike. That's how we ended up with binding arbitration. And you know, sometimes you kind of wish you just could, you know, drop the walk out of the workplace and go on strike. The problem is the strike's been rendered much less effective because of permanent replacements and, you know, other issues like lack of solidarity that we just discussed.
That's true.
I feel we'd be so much stronger if we could strike and if we could support other brothers and sisters in other unions that are part of our group and support them and go out and do the same thing. You know, you treat them badly, well, that's like treating us badly. That's the only power you really have. What made a difference?
Oh, yeah.
Yep, I agree. Can't argue.
Same with the unions,
the poor postal workers, they're getting the short end of the stick, too.
Yeah.
That's another problem. I mean, they
everybody
want to
is. Right, and they're going to, you know, if people don't start caring, they're going to get there.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I know in our town they've reduced the number of employees at our local post office. The guys do a great job. They work very hard and they try to get the job done with many fewer people. I don't know whether you find that in your town.
I'm amazed. I'm always like I'm grateful for the post office, and I'm just truly amazed at how many pieces of mail they move, how accurately they do it, and it's really remarkable when you consider the morale and everything else.
Oh, yeah, and you consider all the competition against them as well, you know, with Federal Express and all these other, but UPS. But I was really, really, really surprised at how they've been cut back so much and what they've been talking to us about. It's too bad. It's just a sad thing to see an institution like that get being threatened like
It's greed. It's greed. It's the people at the top who want to destroy public services, make money for themselves, and it has tragic consequences.
Yes, for everyone.
How can we stop that, Larry? How can we put a damper on that? I mean, it's just like, I know you guys are talking about
it. We got to devote a few shows to that, but, you know, I think one thing is in the main, you know, look, the money in politics is such a huge problem, and Citizens United made it much worse. But for the meantime, we're stuck with that, and I think we just have to figure out how to tap into young people and their energy and their discontent and, you know, get them, you know, as a labor movement, one thing we need to do a better job of is, I think, just building community alliances and starting to fight this stuff and starting to show, you know, we need the correction officer and the school nurse to, you know, stand up for the postal worker. We need the postal worker to stand up for the school nurse.
I agree.
And we got to get back to our own fundamentals before we can fix the other problems.
Yeah.
Oh, and I don't think it's a technological problem that we have. I think it's basically a fundamental problem that unions have right now, and that everybody is, I don't know. There's a loyalty issue. There's I don't know. It just doesn't seem to be as tight as it was.
I think people feel helpless.
Yeah.
And they don't realize that there's more power in numbers. And when they come to that realization, you can do anything. Get people standing together. That's very frightening to the people at the top. Right now, they have it all fighting with each other.
Yeah.
It's divided.
Right,
conquer.
And that's what they want.
It's
yeah.
worked very successfully. It's not not a new formula. It's a very old one. And if we can coach people into seeing that there's a great benefit in working and supporting each other, because it'll bring us all good.
But I think too, if unions can make some strides and really, really, really beat down the doors, you know. Now, see, to me, and I know Trump's frightening to everybody and whatnot, but he's the only guy that makes any sense to bring jobs back to this country.
Yeah, but
I mean,
you're
not going to do it.
That he's talking
no,
about.
They're not.
Think,
they're not.
I think
they're,
they are.
No,
Leo.
They're not, Lila.
What do you think, Larry? About
what are you going to do with all your? You've got a huge unemployment rate here in this country, and most of those jobs were industrial, you know, manufacturing jobs.
Oh, I agree. It's just I'm with Lila to the extent that, I mean, he's just such a cynical panderer that. He has no ideas on how to do it. And look, I agree, Leo, I agree with both of you. I know there's hypocrisy in both parties, major parties. But the fact is Trump, you know, wherever Trump has had an opportunity to strike a blow in favor of the American worker, he hasn't done it. He's closing casinos where the workers are unionized. He's refusing to reach agreements in one of his hotels in Las Vegas. Make America Great hat, you know, as everybody knows, is made in China. He takes advantage of offshoring in his own industry. So I just find it, I agree with you, and it's a shame that it isn't the Democratic candidate in the Democratic Party, I should say, that's talking about bringing jobs back from Mexico and China and having fair trade. It's a damn shame, because it ought to be the Democratic Party that once upon a time stood for that. But I'm not fooled. I guess what I'm saying is I'm not fooled by Trump. That's all I'm saying, is that Trump is just capitalizing on he's capitalizing on what you're talking about, the anger, the frustration, the concern, the discontent, the anxiety. But keep in mind, he's a silver spoon guy who inherited this empire. He's done nothing to maintain it. Most of his money is wrapped up in the entertainment side of his business. He's cynical. You know, he's just a liar and a charlatan. He is talking about trade, and I'm glad he is. So I agree with you, Leo. But I don't think he has any plan for actually, you know, fixing that problem. Because, again, you know, if he had any time he's had an opportunity to do what's right for working people within this country or outside the borders, he hasn't done it.
Yeah, that's what I find very scary. But I also find the fact that TTP is looming out there. And
yep.
I think that's so bad for all of us.
It
is.
I mean, the way our sovereignty, for crying out loud, it gives away.
Right.
You know, I mean, it makes corporations able to sue us. All right,
yeah.
I mean, what kind of a crazy bastard would put that kind of thing together? I mean, Obama is nothing but a freaking lackey to Goldman Sachs and every other one of those bastards out there.
Right.
And
my fear is that, you know,
it's
tabled.
Years.
Yeah.
You know, so
and it may be tabled for now, but it's going to come back.
Yeah.
You know it's going to come back. Whoever gets elected next is going to come back. We're not done.
It's going to come back. I'm surprised that it's not going to be passed by executive order here, you know, before the end of it.
I don't think he has. Well, there are trade agreements where the president
has
some authority, but this isn't one of them, I guess. But wouldn't surprise me, Leo, so.
His final days are just as frightening to me as Clinton's final days were, because when we found out that Clinton signed over our national parks to the UN, all right?
Yeah.
And made them all biospheres, right? And like actually made them collateral for our enormous debt, all right? Clinton was the biggest crook that we ever had, okay? And now his wife is going to become the biggest queen crook we've ever had. It's just so hard, Larry, for us to swallow that, and to vote for a known criminal is like, oh man, you know. And then you get,
not that I think Trump is any better.
He's no
angel. And who knows? I don't even know really what he stands for. As you say, he says these things, but they're no plans.
And there's no track record of his success. You know,
I just hope and pray that the Bernie, the supporters who got involved and energized by Bernie, actually that there is some kind of program out there. They say there is, that, you know, there's an organization that's going to recruit candidates, you know, with the goal of having like a bunch more Bernie Sanders running for Congress and running for state legislatures. That has to be part of the plan.
Because
otherwise he was like this shot in the dark who flames out.
Yeah, but he killed. Not only did he kill himself, but he killed the movement that he created. Because, I mean, by him selling out like that before the convention was just downright greedy. Larry. Well, I guess if he didn't make any money off this deal, I'd say okay. But he walked away with $100 million in his pocket that legally he can keep because he earned it. You know, it was his donations. It had nothing to do with the DNC. That's why he wasn't giving any money to the DNC. You know, because the DNC were funding his opponents or other people in the, you know.
He turned out to be a big disappointment.
One or 2 weeks before the convention, after he was proven that she had stolen every single primary, all right, it was just like, you know, to me, it was just the ultimate betrayal, all right, of every decent American citizen in this country, and you know, it was the deepest cut, all right, and a great betrayal, and it just proved to us that, you know. The guy was just a big shill, just like Howard Dean was. The same, they put him in just like they put in Dean. He rallied everybody to him, all the anti Hillary people, just like all the anti Kerry people, right? Anti war people.
And then he just
gets said, time's up. Thank you very much. Goodbye. I'm going to buy my house, my $1 million house in New Hampshire. And retire now. Goodbye.
But that's also another formula, because the Republicans did the same thing with Ron Paul.
Yeah.
They, you know, he also ran and collected that fringe Republican element and brought them into the party, and that's how they won.
And even though some didn't even endorse him.
We have these formulas that are used over and over again that work so successfully that we all fall for.
That's right.
I hope we sharpen up as an citizen and recognize that, you know, but what it is, Larry, they prey on our hopes that maybe this guy will be the one. He's saying what I really believe in, what's good for the country, what's good for people. I've got to believe in him. And then something happens, like he withdraws or falls apart, and that's it. And then that whole movement just kind of crumbles.
Yeah.
Right.
It did.
Right.
But
anyway. Well, hey, guys, I got to kind of run here.
Larry, we've been on for a long time. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Thanks. Good to be with you.
And keep up the good fight.
Month.
Okay, Phil.
Good. We'll talk soon. I appreciate it.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Have a nice night.
You too.
Thank you. That was Larry Dorman from the Ask Me Union out of New Britain, Connecticut, where we're talking about things that were happening in Connecticut and our general angst about the national election and you know, how it's really sad. We can't get a candidate that really represents the people.
Yeah.
You know, we have one candidate who seems to be representing himself and another who seems to represent a lot of corporations.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
in any case, it's a corporate election, as I see it.
Yeah, no, I think that's very true, and I think we're in such a state.
We're not in a good place.
We're not in a good place now, but you know, things kept coming down worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. I don't know. Every time when I see what they're doing to Trump, all right, and how they're crucifying him and his family and everybody, and then I see how what everyone else is doing to her, it's like, man, I mean, who the hell wants to run for president? Well, I became a virtual president runner.
But
I mean, it was, you know, to be president. And to have to put up with that kind of incredible scrutiny by the American people, I don't know. It's almost to the point there's no dignity left in the job. You know, there's no dignity left. There's no integrity left. There's no anything. I mean, you're stripped naked. You know, and
I don't know anybody over 60 who looks good when they're stripped.
But you know, I don't know. But,
I know what you mean.
But no, it's just that they strip you of all of everything. I mean, they want to know your IQ, and if it's not high enough, then you say you're stupid. They want to know your everything you did from the first grade on. You know, what's your medical records? How much did you make?
How
many
do
times
you weigh? You're 20 pounds overweight.
Yeah, then they analyze your kids. Oh, he both smoked pot when he was 10 years old, and the other one, oh, he's a playboy or something, or she's whatever, and I mean that they just destroy you, and there's nothing left. I mean, and then you have two naked, humbled candidates standing before the general public on election day, going, well, what else do you want from me? You know what I mean? You want to analyze my stools? You know what do you want from me? You know, just vote. You know, and then everybody goes and votes, and one of them wins.
Yeah.
So it's like, nine out of 10 times, the one who wins is the guy who didn't divulge as much as the other guy did. You know.
I guess so.
Yeah. Now with Hillary having to divulge her whole illness as what it is, they may wind up throwing in. She may wind up having to get out of it. All right, and then they'll have to throw somebody else in. But Bernie is not going to. Bernie will never come back.
No.
Right? No one will let him back. Screw you, Bernie. You lost your chance. You didn't mean what you said. You know, no one's going to trust you again.
That's right.
I won't trust him again. You know, no way. And I feel terrible for a friend who was a fundraiser for Bernie. You really believed in him, and yeah, you took her for a ride. So it was like, it's too bad.
She put in a lot of time.
Time and faith and friendships and everything. And I mean, made many money. She was a top California fundraiser for him. You know, crap, she probably would have been in his cabinet, you know, if this thing was real, you know. But, you know, it's just a sick, sick system. We've been covering this, Lyle and I, for the last, since 2000. And
every year, I think it can't get worse, and every year.
Actually, we've been covering this on television and radio since 2000, since the 2000 elections. And, you know, it just gets worse and worse and worse. So it's unbelievable. But
I just think we're in a really bad place politically.
We are. We really are.
You know, I do have to say that.
Yeah, it's really true. Very, very, very true. And on that note, we want to thank our friend Larry Dorman for being.
Well, he works right there on the front and tries to make things better. I mean, he works very hard to get union people the money they deserve, the benefits they deserve,
mm-hmm.
and tries to create better lives for middle-class
people. And he tries to educate people to what the union is and what they're doing. educate them about their national and state and local violations that they're doing against their own workers.
It's a real uphill battle in these times.
I give Larry so much credit for what he does.
I do too. Nonstop on it.
And Sal Luciano and all the guys that are in the union there are all fighting like hell. And unfortunately, they don't have the best candidate to work with for Doris, but hey, what are you going to do? That's politics. Right?
Yeah, it can be politics, as they say, can be a nasty business.
It really is.
And sometimes they have to throw their hat in with somebody they really don't like and don't really believe in, but maybe they feel that that person will be loyal to them. But sometimes you get people, you support them, and then you're the first people they cut.
Yeah.
And we've experienced a lot of that as a union, I think. We've supported a lot of politicians, and they haven't been supportive of us. So.
Well, the rest of the month we'll be, and probably the rest of our lives, we'll be doing a Tuesday night show with some interesting guests. Of course, our Wednesday night show, and where we cover this. And possibly once a month we'll be doing a Thursday night program.
Maybe.
So,
All right.
So we want to thank everybody and enjoy.
Good night, folks.
Good night, everyone.